Well, hello.
Hello, and how's it going, my friend? Guys, thank you so much for joining us tonight. I'm here with my friend Chris. This is the first time I think he's been on. Yeah, first time, right, man?
Yes, I have indeed arrived.
Haha. Guys, you're listening to We're Just Talking. In case you get offended, relax, sit down. We're just talking. So, tonight, as we've been talking the last couple of weeks, my buddy and I were talking about basically how technology has gotten better, but we have become more connected, though less connected. The humanity has almost run out. People don't know how to make conversations anymore. Everything is either text or Instagram, or, you know, Facebook's kind of limping around still. But it's just, there seems to be a drop in human contact. What do you think about that?
I mean, absolutely. And I don't think it's an obscure school of thought anymore. I think a lot of people are kind of waking up to the fact that social media, we've reached the pinnacle of what good it has brought us as a society and as people. And now I think we're starting to see a lot of the effects of the downfalls of social media, specifically like with younger generations who were born and raised on social media. You and I are part of a generation that's like really gifted. We got to experience real life, or what I consider real life, where we were completely disconnected and we lived through the era of pagers and then the first cell phones, the huge Nokia bricks, and now the smartphone era. So when we were kids, we were able to go outside, see our friends, ride our bikes, you know, get into little troubles here and there, but we lived life. And by living a real life outside human contact, person to person, physical, tangible, you're experiencing life the way I think humanity was meant to. And now kids these days, you know, I'm so glad I wasn't born after like 2006, because I can't imagine the pressure you must feel like just being in like middle school, like sixth, seventh, eighth grade, going through puberty, all the awkward changes that are happening to you physically, mentally, emotionally. And then after a hard day of school, you come home and you have to worry about what everybody's saying to you on social media or saying about you. What if something bad happened? You got bullied and five kids filmed it, and now you're going viral on TikTok. Somebody's giving you a wedgie. You know, like, how much of a nightmare would that be? Like, I had a pretty good childhood, all things considered. It wasn't perfect. I've had some bad memories and some embarrassing experiences, but I can't imagine those experiences being filmed and amplified on social media and then having to like live through an era like that. And then, as you were mentioning, it's easier to connect more than ever, but at the same time, because of that, we're more disconnected, because that ease of access also makes people feel like everyone else is disposable, because the second somebody presents you with something you don't like, whether it's emotionally, politically, whatever it may be, you can just swipe left or right and go to the next person. So we're so detached, despite the quickness and the convenience we have with technology.
I think you hit it like right on the head there. And another thing that I've noticed with social media, be it Facebook, Instagram, Threads now, and then X, it's like, you, before that came out, you would have to call someone on the phone and you would have to talk to them or meet them in person, and you would have to have a two-way communication cycle, you know, it's a beginning, a middle, and the end. And now the way a conversation goes is you just drop a comment and somebody gets back to you whenever they want to, or a text. And in a way, it takes away that human connection that I think I, myself, and you, we were lucky enough to have growing up. I was born in 1983, so I saw the very end of the 80s, but mostly my childhood was the early 90s, early 2000s. And cell phones were very new. They came in around 96, 98, but they didn't have any smart capabilities. I mean, it was just an analog red numeric display. And even advanced pagers at the time, they were like $100 a month, and you called an operator and you basically said, meet me here, and that showed up on your pager, and that thing was like $400 from Beeper City or whatever stores pagers back then.
I loved my pager.
Oh, they were great. They were great, man. You could put like pager chains on them. You could change the cases. You could customize them however much you wanted them.
And you had the little belt clip sticking out of your pocket if you were cool, showing off what color pager you had. The 90s kids know what's up on that one.
Right? Exactly. Man, I remember I had a Motorola Bravo Express XLT pager. That thing was like the hot pager on the market. Because you know you were like a snobby little badass if you had one of those. Because not only did it have 6 different ringtones, it came in all black, gray smoke, blue or green, but it was also alphanumeric. So if you were the kid that could actually have words on your pager, you're something special. And I remember just going to school with that thing and just feeling like hot shit. And now it's like people would laugh if they saw someone with a pager. But the funny thing about a pager, though, is it was basically like the beginning of text messaging.
Mm-hmm.
Because you would get a text on there, and then you would have to go to a payphone, because this was before cell phones, and then you'd have to call that person back, and you might not even reach them, because we went everywhere without any sort of communication. I think back then, like how we used to communicate is like walkie-talkies, CB radios, and then when the internet came out, it was American Online. Like our generation, if there's anyone younger listening, we saw the invention of the internet. I mean, I know that kind of dates myself, but it went from something that we had never seen before to now you're connected to millions of people all over the globe. But what was interesting, though, and this was something I was talking to another buddy about the other day, is that even when we had the capability for like ICQ and Yahoo Chat and all that stuff, for anybody who doesn't know, ICQ was a little thing where it was just like a little message box that had the transmitting and receiving. And you would type in a word and all of a sudden this thing would come up and be like, and it would pop up and it would have whatever message you sent or receiving. But there was just some sort of like human connection to it. I really can't explain it, but they didn't pass you by. If you sent a message to someone in a chat room of like 100 people, they would text you back. They'd be like, hey, how's it going? And I met one of my first girlfriends online, like my first serious girlfriends. And it was Sarah. And she ended up living in Ventura County. And that's how we met. And geez, my screen name back then was like DTS83@AOL.com. And her was like Cupcake Princess 00. I can't believe I remember.
Bro, she sounds hot.
Your dude with a name like Cupcake Princess, you know? And, you know, that was back then when you sent pictures and you couldn't send video at that time. You could, but it was like a real grainy 3-second QuickTime video. But we had a connection back then, even with technology. And I was watching those vampire, what was it called? Vampire Robot, I think.
Yeah, there's a YouTube channel. I think it's called Vampire Robot.
Mm-hmm. I think it's that. And I was watching people going through Blockbuster Video, like working at the movie theater. And the thing that I noticed, there was not a smartphone in anyone's hand. And you were just seeing groups of friends hanging out at the mall, enjoying each other. Like, just everyone was interacting with one another. There was, like, nobody was on their phone. And now, when I'm talking to someone, I don't even know if they're paying attention to me because they're on their phone. I'm guilty of doing it. I'm not on a high horse about it, but it's
so easy to get sucked into that. It's so easy to do it. And you're not even trying to be rude. It's like, just, it's a force of habit. We're always looking at our phones. So even when we're finally in the presence of another human being, it's dangerously easy to look down at your phone. Like, and I'll still be listening, because I'll do this with my girlfriend all the time. She'll be speaking to me and I'm actually listening to what she's saying, but it's like I've adopted ADD when I never even had it before, because I can't just look at her while she talks to me. I have to have some kind of visual stimulus while listening. It's insane. It's like so insane how tethered we are to these devices, and how you mentioned you and I are part of the generation, and it fucking blows my mind. I don't know if I can cuss here. I'm sorry. But it blows my mind that there was a time in my life, a large portion of my life spent where the only phone was the house phone, the one or two house phones you had. And if you weren't home, nobody could reach you. That was it. That was it. You had to be home to answer that call. And now if I thought about like leaving the house and forgetting my phone, dude, I'd get like a mile from the house and have to turn back around. He'd be like, oh my God, I'm on my phone. I can't listen to music. What if somebody texts me? What if, you know, and I've had this conversation with my girlfriend. I've even had it with my mom where I've had to tell them, hey, like if I don't text you back within like a 3 hour or less window, don't freak out. I'm fine. Like, because I don't know if you've experienced this, but it's mostly, you know, females in my life, but they'll text me back and they're so used to me texting them back in under an hour that when I don't, they assume something is wrong, like something medically or some kind of emergency. And I had to tell them, you know, like we're all too fucking tethered to these phones. It's like not, it's not mentally good anymore. Like if I receive a message from somebody and 3 hours go by, they assume I'm like dead because I didn't respond. It's like, that's obsessive. Like, you and I lived probably like 15, 20 years of our life where if you weren't home, you didn't get the call. And maybe, you know, as technology went by, we started getting answering machines. Maybe you could return the call, but you know, 9 to 12 hours of your day, you were outside of your house. And the only connection you had was with whoever was in your direct physical vicinity. And to tie this back to how you were saying when early internet chat rooms, whether it was AOL or IRC or all those different early forms of like proto text messaging were available, how there was still an essence of humanity and empathy into that. And I think that's because we weren't fully connected. So even though we were talking to people digitally on a screen, we brought forth that humanity from being humans out in the real world to those chat rooms. Like, I mean, really think about it, because if you were like around our age, give or take, let's say you're in between sixth grade and 12th grade, and it's like 1997. The only people you can connect with are the people at your school or the people that live in your neighborhood, and that is it. Your world is small. It is your school or your neighborhood, and that's it. But now with the cell phones and the smartphones and the technology and dating apps and social media, the world has gotten so much smaller. We can just talk to anybody two cities over like it's no big deal. And because of that, people have become disposable. Like, it's so easy just to be like, oh, this person said something that mildly didn't gel with me. Next, next. Whereas before, when you were confined to just your group of friends at school or just the people in your neighborhood, you had to foster and nurture those relationships because that's all you had. Unless you could move, which is definitely not realistic 90% of the time, you had to take care of those relationships and you wanted them to work, because if you had a fundamental problem with somebody at school or in your neighborhood, that sucks because you're going to have to see that person every day. And that your social pool, your very small social pool, just shrank by a little bit more. But now where we can just be like, oh, no big deal. I have a social pool of literally everybody in my city because of this app. Or if I have a car or I travel for work or whatever, you can go anywhere you want to hook up, to date, to meet people, all this different stuff. And on one hand, that is fantastic. That's so much power and it's so freeing. But on the other hand, I think we're starting to see that it took an essence of humanity out of our social behavior and our relationships, because people are more disposable. It's so much easier just to not communicate or work through even minor issues, just to go to the next person, because I feel like everybody expects a perfect relationship now because they can just go to the next thing if they don't get it immediately. And that's really scary and it's really sad, in my opinion.
I was just gonna actually bring that up when you were touching on that, about how relationships now, whether it's a friend or it's a love interest or, you know, any sort of romantic partner, how they are very disposable. And I've felt that, like, even coming from my own experience in dating in this generation, where, like, if you're going out with someone and, you know, say, like, you've been together 3 to 6 months and one thing, you know, kind of irks you or whatever, or what do they call it, the ick moment now or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, the ick.
And you're just like, you know, and then you automatically think, well, you know what, I might want to have a backup, you know, just in case this doesn't work out. Instead of being like, hey, you know what, maybe I should talk to this person. Maybe it's something they didn't mean to do. Your mind automatically goes to, at least mine does sometimes. But, I mean, I think the commitment, the fight to keep a friendship, the fight to keep a relationship. Case in point, when I would get in a fight with one of my buddies down the street, like, we didn't talk to each other for a couple days, but we smashed it, whatever, you know, we whatever sort of beef we had, and then the next thing you know, we're friends again. Now it's like, oh, whatever, I'm not going to talk to that person anymore. I'm just going to delete him off my app. And, you know, even when you have a relationship with a girlfriend or boyfriend, like even husbands and wives. And, you know, like you said, everyone is just very disposable now. And I see it getting worse. I don't think it's going to get better. It's weird because we've seen it both ways. We've seen it where we had to work for a relationship, any relationship. And then we've also seen where people are disposable. And I don't think we can go back. I think the world has gotten so used to this type of technology to where it's impossible to, what do they say, you know, put the genie back in the bottle. Yeah. And, you know, now, and like you were saying, like earlier, like when people go to school and they get bullied and then they come home and they just see their most embarrassing moments online, the bullying doesn't stop when you leave school. It continues after you get home. Like when I was a kid and I got bullied a few times in school, that was it. When I left school, you know, fuck y'all, I'm gone. But then I go home, you know, like today, kids like, oh, okay, I go home. And then, you know, there's like all kinds of stuff all over Facebook. Oh, you know, F this guy or F that girl, whatever. She's a slut, da 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 da. And, you know, poor kids are like doing themselves in all the time. And it's just, it's a fast paced world. And I think it happened without us knowing it, because I was kind of the last one out of my friend group to get into the whole texting thing, man. I fought so hard against it. And I had one of those phones, what are they called? The LG Shine in like 2000. Yeah,
I remember when you had the LG Shine.
Yep. And I remember like everyone was texting me and they're like, oh, text me back. And I'm like, no, it's a phone. We're supposed to talk to each other on it. And I'm like, you know, just leave me to my $5.99 polyphonic ringtones. Pay like $8 for a stupid little bowling game. And, you know, it just, and then finally I just acquiesced to what people wanted to do. And then the iPhone came out and that changed everything.
Yep.
Like, oh, and still, you know what? Screw iPhone for getting rid of that 2.5 millimeter jack. You guys are crazy. It just, yeah, man, I don't know. And it's just really kind of clouded. And I think even technology today, it's so, like you said, ingrained in our lives. It's changed how we live, how we watch TV, how we set up traveling, how we even go to school now. Like my dad, he's a professor at Cal Lutheran, and he teaches classes online now. And I think a lot of that changed during COVID. I think that was one of the big game changers. People are now working from home, going to school from home. And is it easier? Sure. Yeah. But you're not getting that human connection. And I think that is something that needs to be really discussed, because now we have, what, 68% of men are single. I think it's 51.4% of women are single. And then also, one out of six men can say that they have a best friend currently. One out of six.
That's insane. I feel like that might even be like a generous estimate, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think they might be kind of giving there a little bit. Because I know most of the guys out here, when they go out, they go out by themselves. They go drinking by themselves. And it's just, you know, and everyone works different jobs today. Like when you were younger, or when I was younger, when we were younger, the jobs that we all worked were the same kind of thing. You know, it was like you worked at a restaurant, you worked at, you know, you had a 9-to-5 type job. We all did. But now people have so many different types of employments that it does take away from that social time. And I think being social is healthy, but for a lot of people, they can't. Either they work two jobs, the economy. There's so many things wrapped up into this. And I just feel it's keeping everyone at such a distance. And it's really sad what happened. I don't see how we can get back from this. What do you think?
I mean, I have no idea where this goes. I'm interested to see like how society adapts and morphs as the future goes on. What I could foresee happening is maybe laws eventually get put in place that restrict social media for people under 16 or under 18. I know in Florida, I don't know if they've passed it or they're about to, but there is a law in place that does make it illegal for, I think the age is 16 or under to use social media. It's illegal. I don't know how they're going to enforce that or how they're going to prove that, but you know, I think that is actually the right idea. I don't think kids need to be on social media. Their brains are not fully developed yet. You know, emotionally, they're not fully developed. Their brains have not matured. And the amount of pressure that can come from that, or not even just the pressure, but just the addiction. Because I know if I had Instagram or Facebook or MySpace when I was between 12 and 17, I would have lived and died by that. I would have obsessed on anything anybody was saying about me, my crush, what are they up to? What are they like? How can I find out what they like so I can like that too? So, you know, just all the weird things you do when you're growing up and going through puberty and you're just trying to figure out who you are and trying to be accepted by other people. Like, I don't think kids are equipped to handle that, both from like a traumatic emotional perspective and an addictive perspective. So I think laws hopefully get put in place like nationwide, because you and I live here in America, that restrict minors from using social media for their own mental benefit and also just general safety, because there's always some kind of weird predators on the internet too. But there's no reason for them to be on there. And I think if that happens, we might see things go back in a positive direction, because let's be real, like when I was a kid, I'd always hear, oh, you know, kids are the future, blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, that's such a cheesy saying. What does that even mean? Haha. But now that I'm, you know, touching 40, it's like, no, these kids one day might be my doctor, or they might make my iPhone 20 in the future. You know, they need to go get educated. I don't want a bunch of kids that are just all trying to be social media influencers and America becomes a country of a bunch of people who don't know how to do shit. That sounds like a literal nightmare. And I would hate to see us as a country or just society in general go in that direction. So I hope we can get the kids off of social media and more interested in, you know, activities that promote health, whether it's physical activities, like they get them into some sports, keep them healthy so their bodies are fit, so their minds are also fit, or let's get them nerdy again. Let's get kids interested in tinkering with computers, not just to use them as a user, but how do they work? How can we make them? How can we make them better? When I look at countries like China, for instance, I get kind of like sad, because it seems like if you pull up some of their richest areas versus our richest areas, they've pulled so far ahead of us in terms of society. Their cities are clean because they have laws that are strict and enforced. You don't see tagging on buildings. You don't see homeless people slumped over all over the place. And it's because they have laws and they have a heavy emphasis on education for their youth. I was reading a news story that showed 79% of American kids under 18, when they were polled to see what they wanted to be out of life, the number one answer they gave was social media influencer. And in China, over 87% said they wanted to be doctors or astronauts. And it's like, what the hell, dude? What is like going on? Like, we're so focused on the Kardashians or whatever the hottest reality show of the moment is, and it's like just not the right direction for us to head as a society. Like, fundamentally, and I'm not trying to go too deep off on the tangent, but you know, the kids really are the future. And one day I'm going to be a 60-year-old man and my doctor is going to be some, you know, 30-year-old hotshot out of medical school, and I need that doctor to know how to stitch me up and fix me up and not just be like, well, I saw a TikTok, bro, and it's, you pour some NyQuil on your knee and it's all better, bro. You know, like, I don't want to be in the movie Idiocracy for real. So I think we got to get the kids off social media first, and then we can start worrying about, you know, the adult effect. But yeah, so that's my opinion. Let's get the kids off first, and then adults, I guess we're just gonna have to figure it out for ourselves.
You know, and they back when you and I were younger, they were saying that it was video games that rots our brains. You know, like, oh, we spend too much time playing violent video games like Doom, Mortal Kombat, you know, Grand Theft Auto and whatever. And yet nobody is, you know, going around trying to shoot monsters or, you know, jump on mushrooms. And I mean, I guess there's the occasional mass shooting, but that happened long before video games. But we didn't do it so much to where it became the only thing we did. Like, dude, I played like maybe 4 hours of video games, you know, at night. And then I went to bed, got up, went to school, saw all my friends, came home, would go and ride bikes, go rollerblading, go to the beach, you know, just everything was activities. It was outside. And, you know, and I think it's obviously it's different as an adult now. You know, you're not going to kick me rollerblading. I've never been like that super granola active type guy. But I think for the younger generation, you know, this is not coming from a position of being like an old fogey. This is coming from a position of people that it's affecting all age groups, except for like senior citizens. They're still watching like Alex Trebek and playing.
Those are the people that should be on Facebook, just enjoying some videos and getting some conspiracies and stuff. They're the ones who've earned it and can just chill out every day and sit in their comfy chair. They are the ones who should be on the internet in that capacity.
Yeah, if my grandfather wants to tweet Tucker Carlson and Alex Jones, go for it. Knock yourself out.
And plus, they don't have the energy. Maybe they've racked up some injuries. They can't leave their house as much. Social media is perfectly made and catered to them.
Exactly. You know, the other thing that technology is doing now, it's killing the movie industry. It has destroyed any sort of imagination that people have. Like, scripts are being written down by AI. And, like, especially when we had the writer strike, I think, like, there was one Marvel movie or something like that that was actually, I heard, I don't know if it's true or not, but supposedly it was written by an AI. And, I mean, basically they're all the same thing. Bad guy pops up, they all get together. Oh, we could do this, guys, take him down.
I could easily believe that, having seen some of those more recent ones.
They're so cut and paste.
It's just so soulless. It's like, I don't think any human, at least with a functioning brain, had a hand in actually writing or making this movie. Not really.
And another thing that was brought up that's really, that I thought, you know, it was kind of like a, kind of blew my mind a little bit, was the movie star is dead. If you really think about it, when you think of a movie like The Avengers with, what's his name? Oh, who's Jeremy Renner, Chris Evans, who's the Iron Man guy? Robert Downey Jr., Samuel Jackson. People are not going to watch those actors. They're going there to see The Avengers. And they were talking about, who was it? Anthony Mackie and Chris Evans were saying this. He was like, Anthony Mackie said, when people are going to watch the Avenger movies, they're not going to see Anthony Mackie. They're going to see, you know, the Winter Soldier, Captain America. They're not going to see Chris Evans. They're going to see Captain America. They're not going to see Robert Downey Jr. They're going to see Iron Man.
Yeah.
And I think one of the only movie stars really left is Tom Cruise, who caters to the big box office market. And, you know, far be it for me to judge the guy, but he still understands how to make a blockbuster film. And I think a lot of what Hollywood is not taking a gamble on is, okay, can we fill these seats if we release it in the theater? You know, most movies come out to a streaming service or Hulu, or they'll show up on, you know, I was about to say Redbox, but Redbox is dead. I don't even think they have Redbox anymore, do they?
I don't know if I have. They do. I haven't put a disc in a player in so long. I have no idea, because, like you said, it's like all streaming and digital now.
Yeah, you can't even. I went to Best Buy the other day, and you can't even find digital copies anymore. Physical. Yeah.
Because like, what happens if your internet's out for a day or whatever? It's like there's a really important part of being able to own something physically.
Yeah, and that's something that I think a lot of people take for granted. Everyone is so used to having the internet, you know, but when the internet dies and you only got 56 gigabytes of RAM on your phone, you might need to pull out that hard copy.
And yeah, I didn't even think about that aspect. Like, some people have like data caps or whatever, you know. Like, I've just had days where my Wi-Fi for whatever reason just craps out, and it's like, oh, what, you know, what's the issue now? And it's gone for the day until my service provider sends somebody out and, you know, gets it running again. And even just that one day, it's like, oh my God, all the digital movies that I bought, useless, totally useless. But you know what's not useless? The Blu-rays or the DVDs. I can always pop those in. And as long as the electricity's on, I can still watch a movie. Or even if it was out, I could still, you know, I've had a generator or something. But if there's ever an internet issue, whether it's financial, you don't have enough money for internet, or you have a data cap, or it just goes out, it's a bad storm, you can still rely on your physical collection. But, you know, the digital, it's a little sketchy. And not even just that, like, I buy a lot of movies through Vudu, like the service Vudu, which I think has now become just Fandango. And it's like, what if that company goes under one day? Like, my whole, you know, quote unquote library that I think I own, you know, oh, sorry, the company doesn't exist anymore. So the thousands of dollars you've spent on your digital library, psh, tough shit. Whereas my Blu-rays will last for as long as I take care of them. So
wait a second. Is Vudu, and you said Fandango, is that an actual, does it run off of a server?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just like if you were to buy a digital copy of a movie from Apple or Amazon or any other service. I just, for whatever reason, way back in the day, I started using Vudu first. And so I've just stuck with them because that's where I have my biggest digital library. And so I just keep adding to it. But, you know, one day that company, in theory, could go under. And it's like, they're not going to take care of the customer or whatever. Like, if whoever buys them out one day is like, oh, yeah, all those titles you owned, that was, you know, that license was with that company. And now we're some other company. So, for instance, as I've been a Vudu customer, at one time they were partially owned by Walmart. You know, they send me like an email, oh, you know, Walmart and us are like basically subsidiaries now or something. But now recently they're like, oh, Vudu is becoming Fandango now or something. So it's like, okay, every time they do that, I get a little nervous because it's like, well, I get to keep my library, right? It's like, this isn't some new company where you're going to say, oh, you need to pay it for a new licensing fee. And they, in theory, could do that. And there's nothing I can do because it's just digital. I'm just some guy. I'm not going to go hire an attorney to take down a company as one guy. So it's just, you don't have a lot of power. I call it like the Trojan horse effect. And it's the same thing with smartphones. Like, you know, here's a really awesome piece of technology. It's going to do all these amazing things for you, whereas you need to use to have like a dedicated video camera on your shoulder, a calculator, a phone, you know, all these different things. This one device is all those solutions for you. But in like 15 years from now, it's going to make society real different. Humanity is going to be real lowered, and we're all going to be like looking down like zombies. So it's like, you don't think about that. Same thing with like, oh, digital, I don't have to get up and put a disc in. This is great. I've got all my movies at the touch of a button. And sometimes there's really good sales on the digital movies. I don't have to spend gas to go to Best Buy. But what if that company that you bought all your digital movies from goes under one day? Those are not your movies, or even games for that matter. Like, those licenses that you think you own, you don't really own. So it's just, it's that Trojan horse effect where they give you a convenience, but on the back end, you could get, you know, screwed over.
Oh, yeah, because technically you don't even own your iPhone operating system. It's licensed by Apple. Like, you don't own it. Like, with Windows, at least you had a backup physical drive disk. Like, you just throw it in there and re-upload Windows. And then, you know, your computer at that point in time, say you bought like a 2005, I don't know, Alienware, hypothetically. And it was running like, I hate to say this, but Windows XP Pro or something. And God rest its soul. But you owned that. No, you didn't own the license, but you owned a physical copy of that disc. It's not like I can put a little tiny disc in my iPhone. Yeah, you can reinstall it. Mm-hmm.
And like, so, that's the saying they say now. It's like, you will own nothing and be happy. They don't, all these corporations don't want us to own anything. They want to sell us the subscription forever and ever and ever. And me being somebody who used to be really heavy into photography, I used to get Adobe Photoshop, and I would buy Adobe Photoshop and install it. And that version would last me like a decade. And I would only really ever need to upgrade if like some new version came out that introduced some amazing new technological feature that I was interested in. And sometimes I would upgrade. But now you can't buy Photoshop outright. You can only have it as a subscription service. And it is stupidly expensive. You can never just have Photoshop. And basically, most apps are like this now. It's all subscription-based. And it just, it feels so gross. Like, before, it's like, hey, I'd rather just give you $400 one time cash and I can own this program forever. I can put it on all my different computers. If this computer dies, I can install it on my next one and so on forever until I get sick of this program or you, the company, introduces something so much better that I give you more money for a better product later. But they're like, nope, those days are gone. You're going to pay us forever and ever and ever for the same product. No other choice. And it feels really gross.
Oh,
and I'm like, I don't think I'm a perfect person, but I really am, for the most part, an extremely law-abiding citizen, and I try to do all the things right in my life. But I can absolutely see why people choose to pirate certain things now when companies are expecting like $400 a year as a subscription service for a single photo editing app, and they offer you no way to just buy it outright, even if you're willing to give them more money. Like, hey, it's $400 a year. Let me give you $800 and I just own it forever. No? Okay. Well, then I'm just going to have to go through other means because that feels too gross for me.
Oh, it's
the value proposition to what they're offering. It's just so anti-consumer. It's just insane.
Oh, it's the same thing with like my antivirus software. Like literally I had to renew my antivirus software, and I used to be able to go into like Circuit City or the Good Guys or CompUSA and buy like, you know, one of those big giant boxes that had John McAfee on the front.
Yeah.
And you know, I would come home, put the disc in, install it. And, you know, maybe it would expire like 5 years from now after they had like freaking the Melissa virus, you know, some stripper chick or something. And it would be like, well, you know, you need to get like an update, but you would get a free automatic update.
And yeah, it would just be like, oh, you buy it one time and we give you 2 years of free updates or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. And when my antivirus software stopped, it won't do the VPN anymore. It, like, everything stopped. And then I clicked on it and said, oh, would you like another 14-day trial? Or you can buy it again for a year for $130 up to 5 devices. And that sounds like a good deal, but if you really think about it, so I'm going to live for probably, I don't know, the next 30 years, if I'm lucky. And, you know, that's going to be, what, 130 times 30? That's a lot. And
that's a piece of software like you might not actually ever need. Maybe you never actually even get a virus. Like, it's almost like insurance, except insurance does make a little bit of sense, obviously. You don't know if somebody's going to hit you on the road or whatever, but this, you might not even ever need it. You just pay for this thing forever and you never actually once needed it. Also, by the way, it probably slows your computer down doing all these virus checks.
Yeah, it does. Like, it's I remember back in like 2010, there was all these free antivirus or any bloatware stuff that would come with a computer. And
actually what made me switch to Apple all those years ago.
Yep.
I was constantly getting a new PC every year because they would get a virus or the antivirus software would slow my computer down so much. And I was like, fuck this, dude. And then I had a Microsoft Zune, you know, because I was super anti-Apple for so long. And I had a Microsoft Zune, which is the competitor to like the iPod. I had two of them. They both died on me, like one, and then a month later, the next one died, and the software was always slow and clunky, and my PCs were always, and I was like, fuck this. Like, and it's the same thing. Like, I was willing to pay Apple a premium price because they were and still are significantly more than all the other competing products. But every Apple computer I've had has literally lasted me a decade before it dies. And it's like, okay, I spent like $1,500 on this computer, but it gave me 10 solid years. Whereas before I was spending $600 on a PC like every 14 months. And it's like this, it's adding up to it ended up being more than an Apple computer. So this isn't a whole Apple versus whatever, like whatever works for you is what works for you. That's the best way to go. And thank God technology has changed to where like Android versus iPhone or PC versus Mac, it's the line's more blurred. It's all kind of good now. But there was that period that you're mentioning where you were just constantly getting viruses, just opening up google.com or whatever from, because you had the wrong web browser and all these different settings are enabled and the bloatware and the adware. It's like, oh my God, fuck this. This is not worth it.
Yeah. And like restore page is like, no, they have the virus on it. Like, ugh. And
and then mom comes in, what did you do? It's like, I didn't fucking look at the computer.
It's like, why are all our bank accounts with overdrawn?
How come it keeps coming up to backdoorsluts9.com?
Yeah. What the heck is Brazers? Is that a new shampoo? Like, yeah, it's made by Herbal Essence. You know, like, that was the other thing, too. Like, when, because I still have my I don't know what you call the desktop version of a Mac, but iMac, I think, or yeah. Is that what it's called? Okay.
Yeah.
I bought mine in, like, 2014, and I still have that thing. It still works pretty dang good. Like, you know, I just use it as a jukebox now, pretty much, and, like, watch movies on it. But, you know, it's still a really good computer. Mac is, like, definitely made for photos, multimedia stuff. You know, it's not a game computer at all.
No, definitely not. Ugh.
But
that's the one thing I wish Apple would get, you know, their act together on is, like, the gaming.
Well, they're supposed to have that, what's that thing called, the Apple Vision that came out? And I guess that thing is the bee's knees, man.
It's $3,500, though.
Oh.
It better be the bee's knees, the bee's chest, the bee's booty. Like, it better be every part of the bee. $3,500, I could take a real life vacation.
So what is... have you read about the Apple Vision? Like, what is that supposed to have? Like...
It's nothing really different than any other VR thing. And in some ways, it could be considered significantly worse. Like, so if you're really into gaming, it's definitely not as good of an option as all the other ones, because there's just not as many games available for Apple platforms. But I think other than gaming, it does every other thing better than all the other VR headsets. Like, the resolution is supposed to be better. It's supposed to be more comfortable. It's supposed to be more immersive. Just all this, you know, stuff. But all of that stuff is nothing I would ever really need. Like, the one aspect of it that is mildly enticing to me is when you put it on, you can have an experience that feels like you're in a movie theater, like with a huge, I don't know, 200-inch screen. And it really looks like you're sitting in a movie theater. And it's like, oh, that's cool, but I already have a 65-inch TV that cost me $500, and it's a great quality screen, so I don't need to spend... You're getting close to $4,000 after tax, depending on where you live. And it's like, man. And even if, you know, even then, it's like, I could probably just get a 85-inch OLED for half that price. So I think right now it's for, like, developers, for, like, really, really high-end software nerds to get it and tinker with it and see what kind of apps they can develop and see where they can push the technology. But if somebody's just interested in general VR, I would just get, like, a Oculus Quest, or, like, something that can tether to a PC for PC gaming more, or, like, even the PSVR. But the Apple thing is, like, such a special use scenario that it's – I'm a big Apple guy. I have iPhone. I have a MacBook. I use it all every day for both work and for fun. I have no interest in that headset. Even if it was just $200, I still would just get the Oculus Quest. I think there's just better applications for it because it's been around longer.
Yeah, they've had more time to work out the bugs. They started on the Oculus Rift, like, developers model or something like that. And then they had, like, the HTC Vive and, you know, a bunch of other different VR. And I'm kind of, like, excited to see VR come back, because I remember, like, in the mid-90s when VR first came out, oh, my God, man, those helmets were, like, putting on, like, a World War II, like, Stag Hallam German helmet or something like that. And it was just ridiculously heavy, and then you had to have these giant, like, like gas station cords hanging off of you. And
yeah, the wires is where, like, I was always, like, turned off for so long by VR. Like, you just have so many wires coming out of you. It's like, oh, you know, like, I'm in this other world, but in real life, I can't move at all because I'm going to pull this thing down or rip this cord out. And it just felt so restrictive, but now they've solved a lot of that.
Yeah, they did. And I always theorized that the person or the company, the inventor, whatever, the set that wins the VR wars is the one that's going to give you the best bang for your buck, that's the most comfortable, because you got to figure you're putting this gear on for the next, like, 3 to 4, sometimes maybe 6 hours. And the accessories that they built for the Oculus, I had the Oculus, I think it was called Oculus Go. That was, like, the first one I had. Well, before that, I had, like, the little one you put your phone in. It was, like, Samsung Gear VR or something like that. And then I got the Oculus Go. That was pretty cool. You know, it was actually a lot of fun. And then when I got the Quest, like, that was just, it's a whole nother world. Like, you can, like you said, go anywhere, even though if you're not there. Like, I took a tour through Ukraine, like the downtown streets of Kyiv. It felt like I was really there. And I've never been to Japan, but I went there the other night. And what's cool about it, if someone else has one, they can join you in the chat. And so you can just talk to each other as you're walking around the city or something. You know, it's really neat. And like you were saying, with the big screen and all that, Netflix has an app for the Oculus. And so does, like, I think HBO does too, where you can watch it at any angle. And it's just this giant screen, man. And it's pretty comfortable. I never, like, took off my Oculus set and went like, my face. So yeah. It's pretty nice. It's not a bad system. You know, it's like, I think it's for the good one, you're going to run around like $400, but still, like, that's not bad.
You know? I almost wish in like some parallel dimension, VR was what cell phones is to us. Like, there was no smartphone. Like, our technology for phones topped out at cordless house phones. And VR is where the technology went. Cause it's like, well, wouldn't that be more disconnected? You have this thing on your head. You don't even see other people, but it's like, no, because you'd go in your little virtual world and you get your little technology fix and you have your fun experience, but then you're still forced to take it off at the end of the day and you'd still have to go out of your house. I think it's like the smartphones that like really has us all like zonked out. Like, we're always like looking down, and sometimes you end up looking down too long, refreshing social media or checking the latest news or whatever. And by the time you pick yourself up, you stand up straight and you lift your head up, your eye level up, you're kind of just zonked out. And that's an effect, because, you know, just speaking about VR, it's like, that sounds really fun, but I'm right where I'm at right now in my life. I'm trying to get myself off of screens so hard because I have to use them for work. And clearly I'm going to interact with my phone every day. That's, you know, I've got a music subscription. I use my phone as a camera at work because the video cameras in my phone are so much even better than my $3,000 dedicated professional cameras. So I'm tethered to screens enough for like all these other different reasons that I have to engage with them. And then about 2 years ago, I found myself just spending like my enjoyment of real life was decreasing and I couldn't figure out why. And it's like, yo, dude, you're just in your bedroom in 100% of your free time looking at a screen. And how we were talking at the beginning of the conversation, when we were young, we were forced to go outside because that was the only option. And yeah, we had video games, and video games, I've always loved them. I played one today. I'm going to play one probably after we talk. But there's like a threshold for me with video games. I play like maximum in like my peak video game phase, like if I'm sick or if it's winter, like 2 or 3 hours a day. That's like my biggest play time. But I always, you know, balance it with going outside. And that never changed for me. But the smartphone, it hits so many different endorphin pleasure centers. You know, you feel like you're socializing, but you're not really connecting. So you feel like you've socialized from your bedroom. Oh, I did some shopping from my bedroom. I did some bill paying from my bedroom. You know, all these things where we used to have to drive to the mall and you're physically at a mall. And it's like, oh, I bumped into my friends at the mall because everybody used to have to leave their house. That's gone. To talk to you and I would have to like get in person or like pick up a real, you know, actual phone for a conversation most of the time. Now, as you know, for many, many years, I was a big texter, and now I'm finally getting out of my texting phase where I'm starting to realize and appreciate hearing your voice more than I am texting. But I was so zonked out like 2 years ago for like a 5-year period, I was zonked out and I kind of like had to wake myself up, like rebirth myself mentally. And it all, my first thing was I had to delete all my social media for like a year and kind of like let go of that addiction. Now I still have it, but I'm not addicted to it like I was, where I can just look at it like once in the morning, be like, okay, whatever, and get on with my life. But I'm increasingly happier because I'm engaging with my actual real life, physical, tangible surroundings more than I am just staring at my phone. So now I only use my phone in those like ways, like before bed at night. I'm already in bed. I've done all my, you know, my stuff for the day, my real life stuff. It's like, okay, now I'll go on social media at night for like half an hour before bed. It relaxes me. Whereas before, the second I was done working, straight to the phone all day, phone, until I passed out. And it's like my enjoyment of life noticeably decreased around that time. And, you know, I'm not speaking for everybody else. This might just be a me thing, but for me, that was very true. And I had to cut down on not necessarily screen time, because I could still watch TV or play games, like I mentioned, but specifically my phone time. It was too dangerous for me personally.
Well, also, I think psychologically, like if you're going through a rough patch in life and you're scrolling through Facebook or Instagram and you're seeing just random strangers live, you know, having the time of their life, you know, like let's say you just had a breakup or something like that, and you know, you're missing your ex or whatever, like immediately right after, and you scroll through and you see like this random couple, you know, with their feet in the sand out there in Fiji, you know, with a boat going by, or they're in Dubai or whatever, you know, just having the time of their life. And you're like, damn, why can't I have that? You know, what you don't understand is maybe that's a green screen, or maybe that's just like some sort of
maybe there was just one good day, and then the next day they had a brutal fight at the hotel because they wanted something different for breakfast. Or you know what I mean? Like, they're just showing you the absolute pinnacle, and it's so easy to like obsess on that and think everybody's so much happier than you and so much better off than you, when that's not reality.
Oh yeah, I used to believe that, like, up until probably, I don't know, maybe a year ago. Like, I was really social media. That's why I'm not on Facebook. I mean, I have a Facebook account, but I'm barely on it. The only time I go on Facebook is probably to snatch an old picture that I have uploaded. It's pretty much like my online photo bucket. And that's it. You know, like, once in a while I'll talk to like an old friend, like, oh, hey, how you been? But that's it. Like, you know, there's nothing on Facebook. Facebook is all about boasting. You know, it's all about like, oh, look what I did. And that's fine. Cool. You know, but I don't see the need to tell everyone in the world what I do now. But before, you know, I felt like I had to. So I felt connected, but I was like, nobody's looking at this. Nobody cares. Nobody gives a shit. You know, they're all going on with their life. You know, and it's just, it's weird how, and they say that, what was that show on Netflix called, like, Social or something like that, or The Social Decline or Social something. And they were talking about how social media has been designed by like renowned psychologists to be addictive, to trigger those neurons, or not neurons, but those endorphins in your brain. And it's messed up. And the whole TikTok culture, no offense to anyone that's out there, but it's fun, but I have literally made it their life. And I think one of the reasons why the influencer culture is so popular, because it can take the person that didn't even graduate high school, no offense to anybody who hasn't, but it can take those people and it can make them millionaires. It can, you know, you can be from any walk of life, any ethnicity, you know, boy, girl, whatever, and you can become popular. You can go from making $12 an hour at a job, you know, like sweeping floors or something, to making, say, like, I don't know, 20 grand a month. I think the highest like influencer makes like $1 million a month, something like that. And then you have OnlyFans. And OnlyFans has definitely destroyed relationships. You know, I believe that. Because, you know, and this is going to be a conversation for another time, but I think a lot of women now just feel that in order to be successful, they have to be an OnlyFans model. And, you know, that if all this stuff was all there is, then how the hell did the generations previously make it? You know what I mean? I think that's something that people need to ask themselves.
I mean, there's, I have like a deep answer, but I'd like, if you wanted to save that for, because I could go off on a whole other,
you know, do it, man. Fire off.
So, I mean, just that all comes back to the state of like, not just society in our country, but our economy and everything. Like, there, my parents used to tell me, like, when I was like 17, 18, 19, you need to go get a real job. You need to go get a real job. And I would like tell them, it's like, well, what is a real job? What do you mean real job? Because they, you know, they wouldn't want me to just work some part-time minimum wage thing, which for me at the time, if you're a kid and you're willing to work, like you're 17 in high school, parents should be supportive of that. It's like, oh, got a good work ethic, even at a young age, he has a starter job or whatever. But the quote unquote real job, at least here in America, what is that? Because if you don't go to a university and, or, you know, spend an extra like decade in some kind of postgraduate school to become a doctor or whatever, the area for most normal people in between, it doesn't exist anymore. You're either in the service industry working at, you know, Walmart making minimum wage or whatever it is, or you're a doctor or a lawyer or something really, really high level. And this whole middle area that used to exist in our economy for people to make all just different kinds of various products or perform different services, it doesn't exist anymore. Because literally, listener, right now, grab any single object in your room as you're listening to this and tell me where that object was made. Was it made in America? I would bet you $100, like 99% of the things in your general vicinity that you could reach and touch right now were not made in America. So all these things that were once, you know, made in America, factory jobs, making products, making candles, making anything, anything you consume as a consumer, body wash, anything, nothing is made here. It's all made in Asia or South America. And that's fine. Good for those countries. But it really breaks my heart as an American. And this is the only country I'm ever going to live in. Like, you know, I'm never going to be a billionaire. I'm never going to be able to have a vacation home in Sweden or something like that. So I'm heavily invested in seeing America do well. And it makes me really sad that this country, you know, at the very high levels of politics has sold out their people. It's like, oh, well, it can be a little cheaper. We can get it a little bit cheaper if we send it over here and over there and over here. And it's at first, it's the same thing. Trojan horse effect that I mentioned with like smartphone, social media. It's like, oh, this is great. When I go to Walmart, I'm saving $12 a trip and I make one trip a month. So I'm saving a ton of money at Walmart. But what happened to all those jobs? Where are your kids going to work? If, you know, if you didn't have it set up where you were able to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on their college education after high school, or they just didn't do that for whatever reason, you know, where are those jobs? So now we have a nation of influencers or OnlyFans models. And that's a better case scenario than what a lot of people end up doing. A lot of people end up just on the street. I mean, when I was a kid, I live in a pretty good city, like all things considered, like I live in a pretty good area. When I was a kid, there was one homeless guy in town and everybody knew him. He was the homeless guy. And we all felt bad for him. I think he was like some kind of a veteran that had been disabled. And he was a sweet man, and we'd always like give him food or a little bit of cash. And he was the one homeless guy. When I leave my house, I can go about 2 miles and I'll see probably like 50 to 60 homeless people outside. And it's so sad because that never existed when I was a kid. And not because the population suddenly exploded, but because there is no opportunity for what I'll call the stragglers, the people who weren't raised in a family who had their path set out before they were even born. Like, oh, you know, our little son or our little daughter, they're going to go to this prep school and they're going to go to university and then they're going to go to postgraduate school or whatever it may be. There was a whole safety net in place for most Americans in the form of work. And not just was there more work, but back then, if you were willing to work full time, you were able to buy a home.
Yep.
So even if you can find some kind of a job, even if you're the manager of Target or whatever, you know, like the best non-college educated job you can think to get, or let's say you even do some kind of graphic design, you're self-taught, you've worked your way up, you're still, even if you work 40 hours a week and you're making, let's just even say you're making $65,000 a year, which is a pretty, sounds like it should be a pretty decent amount of money, you can't afford a house. You're going to have to pay rent for the rest of your life if you're lucky enough to find a studio apartment under $2,000 a month. And it's like the opportunities are so few. It breaks my heart for like our entire country because so many people have to turn to things like OnlyFans or just as a social media influencer.
Yeah, even people that don't want to be an influencer, you know, they end up like doing stupid shit like eating Tide Pods or sniffing cinnamon, doing like the most ridiculous shit just for views so they can, you know, hopefully make a living.
Just real quick, I want to say I'm not saying there's not value in that because, man, there are some phenomenal people on like on YouTube and just doing all these different things. Like there's been times where I felt low in life and I popped on YouTube and I found like a really good motivational speaker who set me out on a path mentally that changed my whole perspective for the rest of that year. So there's people doing it that should be doing it. That is their calling. They've got the gift of the gab or whatever, or maybe they're really good at making videos or video editing or whatever. So that's a real job. I'm not trying to take anything away from that. I'm just saying the reason we're all turning to that is because there are no more jobs. And the jobs that are left are for bullshit pay to where it's like, why would I put myself through that just to be in the same shitty box that I'll be in if I don't do it?
Back in 1999, 2000, obviously the viewers don't know him, but I had a friend that worked at a movie theater. He was a movie theater manager and I was a projectionist. And we both worked I think, about 38 hours a week, and he worked 40. He had a full-time. I was still going to school, so I could only work part-time, even though, like, you know, I'm still 38. I was still making – I was making about $375 an hour, $475, something like that. And my paychecks were about, like, $525 a month before taxes. I don't know the exact amount, but point being is that my friend, who was a movie theater manager, this is the beginning job. He rented a beautiful two-bedroom apartment with a deck overlooking the ocean on Main Street called Hawaiian Village. And now there is no way that you could afford something like that just being a movie theater manager. Like, it is insane how expensive stuff is. And you're right. Those types of jobs where people could work those jobs in the middle class income and still have a pretty good life, they're gone. So now you're either, you know, doing some shiesty, you know, kind of rollover type thing where you're going to end up screwing up someone or getting in trouble, or you're, like, you know, cooking books somewhere. Right. You know, or...
It's time for bed.
Oh, shut up. The
okay, mom, geez.
I don't know, like, I'm just gonna call her Amazon thingy.
Yeah, you don't want to say the name.
Yeah, it freaking, I don't know how to disconnect that, but it keeps telling me it's time for bed. It's trying to put me in check or something. But yeah, you like used it? To be able to work them, huh?
I was like, do you like it?
I don't know, it's kind of getting the whole dominatrix thing going, you know. What's up, baby? You looking you know, I like your black slim figure. But yeah, the middle class jobs that you could work where you could still make a living and be okay and still have a social life, they're gone. Plus, social lives are gone. You can't have fun anymore. Now everything goes to rent, paying bills, groceries. And, you know,
it's like there's no time anymore after you're done working. At least that's how I feel. Like, I do, like, you know, my little work week or whatever. And I feel like that's it. I don't have time to do anything else. And that's even, you know, how we're talking about text messages and stuff. I was so opposed to having phone calls for so long just because I felt like I didn't have time. Because we're all, like, so overworked, or we're all just trying to catch up, that there's no – even if you have actual time, you don't have the energy. You're just so like, oh, my God. Let me catch up on, like, my psychic soul energy. I'm so fucking drained from the soul-crushing weight of the state of the world. And then going back to money, my first job I had, I was 16 years old. I think that was when I was first legally allowed to work. I immediately got a job. I got a job at Taco Bell. And, like, my first paycheck, I think, for the whole month, it was like $375, because it was only a part-time job. But with that $375 back, I don't know what year that was, maybe like 1997, 2000, something like that, like in that general range, I was like, I felt rich, dude. I could do anything I wanted. Almost $400. I could take my girlfriend out on a million dates. I could eat anywhere. I could literally do anything I wanted with $400 at that time. And not just because of inflation, things got more expensive. Like, when inflation goes up, wages are also supposed to go up. Things are just punishingly more expensive now. Doesn't matter about inflating, you know, factoring in inflation, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, things are just brutal now. Like, and I think that even ties back into the, you will own nothing and be happy. Like, the wealth disparity, like, let's say I woke up tomorrow and I was one of these, like, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, Zuckerberg level rich billionaires, I would still care so much about all the worst parts of my country, because even as a billionaire, I would assume you have to drive the same roads. Like, I know, like, rich people love to live in, like, LA or whatever, Bel Air. You still got to be in the same dog shit 405 traffic that I have to be in as just some sucker. So it's like, I don't know, I just feel like at the top level, all of our politicians, all of our wealthiest, you know, citizens, they need to start caring more about, like, the average American, because what does it matter if you're a billionaire and you're living in a gated paradise that's surrounded by literal shit, like a literal wasteland? There was one of those, you know, one of George Romero's last zombie movies, I think it was called Land of the Dead.
Yep.
The concept of that movie was, basically, all of the, you know, the wealthy people are living in this high-rise apartment building.
Fiddler's Green.
Yeah, everything outside of that was just a wasteland of death and zombies, and that's kind of what it's really becoming. And I remember as a kid watching that, thinking, like, why would you want to live like that? Like, ooh, you think you have the illusion of safety in your high-rise apartment building, but eventually you're going to have to come outside for some kind of basic need or resource. And that's how it's kind of really getting. Obviously, there's not real life zombies. I mean, we have some pretty close things to that with some of the street drugs, but like the wealthy people, like, eventually are going to have to get in the same areas that us common folks live in. And it just gets so ugly and so sad to see all the homeless people and the tagging and the people sleeping on the streets and all this. You know, it's like, how can our country or our politicians, they all have sweet words. It doesn't matter if it's left or right, but they all don't change anything. They all are ineffective. And I used to think it was ineffective because, like, whatever the reason was they gave us, oh, this thing's blocking it, or we're trying, or it takes time. It's like, no, they're ineffective because they're getting an office, in my opinion, of course. And they're just capitalizing on their position, taking that wealth, taking that power and that influence and the bribes and the donor money and the super PAC and all this stuff. And they're living in their gated communities while the whole rest of the country, large portions of the country, is just a wasteland. And it's like, you know, going back to how I mentioned, I saw like videos of China. It's like the powerhouse they've become, whereas America was the beacon of power and the future and technology and education, the forefront of everything great. And it's like, we can't even take care of our own people. It's like, what happened? And it's so sad.
Well, I was even talking to my friend in Ukraine, and I was asking how her health and education system is. And they said that they have free health care. And I said, wow, that must be expensive. And she's like, no, it's taken out of everyone's taxes. Like, everyone pays into it. It's like a universal basic health care. And, you know, like, if you have like a major operation, you have the ability to pay it down over time. Also, I guess school is free over there. Like, one of my other friends that lives in, I think she lives in Odessa. And she was saying, like, yeah, I'm going through my fourth year of university right now and to become a linguist. And I said, like, how much did your degree cost? And she's like, oh, it's free. She's like, you get free schooling as long as your grades are decent. And I said, that's insane. Yeah. And they're a poor country. No offense to any Ukrainians, but they're not the richest. You know, they're still in the middle of war and they're still getting free school. And, you know, and it's just, it's interesting how their money works there, the dichotomy and everything. And like $300 is the normal pay for a waitress a month, $300. You can live like a king over there if you make $400. You can live like a straight baller. You know, and it's just, you know, there's parts of that country that are poor, but most of the country is like we are, you know, like as far as like, you know, having the same sort of it looks a lot like London, actually. But it's just, the United States used to be one of the best countries in the world, and it still is a really good country. But I think there's a lot of things that we have to do. We have a lot of work, but nobody's working on it. The whole country is concentrating on one thing, like, oh, the border. Or, oh, you know, this person can't use this bathroom. It's like, okay, how is that going to make sure someone has a roof over their head?
And we're so distracted by the wrong things. It's so insane. Yeah, like that, like we just mentioned, the bathroom thing. Like, and I'm not, you know, like, whatever. I have empathy for if you feel a certain way, you know, I'm not trying to tell you you can't feel a certain way. But that is not a major issue right now. When you look at the state of, I'm not talking about the world, just our country, because the world has its own problems, but our country, like the state of it, like we have so many things that we need to take care of that are more important than where you're going to the bathroom. Oh my God. Somebody's telling you have to use this bathroom. Like, hey, like, I don't like to fucking take a shit in public, period. I don't care what the fucking symbol on the door is. You know what I mean? I just want to go home. You know what I mean? Like, so it's never going to be comfortable to be in a public bathroom for me. I don't care what gender you consider me, but that is not an issue that's causing my life. That's not what's causing me to not own a home. You know what I mean? Like, and even that comes back to, like, if I was a billionaire, like, I don't even know if I'd want to live in America right now, because that all comes back to, like, even if – and this is an American problem. I think we all are trying to get rich ourselves. Fuck everybody else. I got mine kind of situation. And that's how we kind of got where we're at. Like, the attitude of general America, I would say, is fuck you. I got mine. Your neighbor is always trying to have the bigger truck or whatever. You know what I mean? The slightly bigger house. Oh, you have 3 bedrooms? I've got a 4. It's like we have to care about each other a little bit more. And so many people, you know, we have the American flag in front of our house, or we take pride, I'm American, America, America first. But then we don't do it in the important ways directly with our people. America first, but also when I'm in traffic, I'm going to cut you off because I should get ahead before you. Fuck you. And that just little mentality reflects on our society as a whole, because that's a symptom of a bigger problem. And that's the way we treat everything. And I'm not saying don't get your money, because fuck, I'm going to try and get my money. I want you to try to get your money. But the thing is, if I can get that level of money, you know what I'm talking about? I say get the money. I want to bring my people up. I don't want to just get it and be like, oh yeah, now I can finally get all the models in here and take the vacations and get a yacht. It's like, I want to live a luxurious life, but I want to do that by taking care of my best friends, my family, make sure all my people are good. Whereas I think other people are like, oh, I've got the money. It's all about me. Let me just, you know, whatever, you know, your brain can go wherever you want with that, but in a more selfish way, where we have to think about society. Because if we're living in the country, don't you want the country we live in to be nice, not just your little safe gated area? And like, I'm more sensitive to this because I'm very close to Los Angeles. And I was in a relationship with a girl who literally lived in a $1.9 million home in a really nice part of Los Angeles County.
Who was that?
I don't want to say her name, but okay. It was a few years ago during the pandemic. I was dating this girl for about a year, and I'd go pick her up, and I was like, wow, this is a really nice house. And her house, despite the fact it was like almost a $2 million house, it probably is now actually, she had like a 10-foot brick wall all around it, and then like another 2 feet of like spiked fence on top of that brick wall. And so where you were in her house, you couldn't even like see the trees or the neighborhood because it was literally bricked like a little prison. And I was like, oh, your wall's intense. It's like, how do you get your mail? And they're like, oh, we literally have to call the post office or like let our Amazon drivers know to throw it over the wall. And the reason they do that is because in that part of LA, despite the fact she lived on a street, her house was the smallest house on the block. All the other houses were like $10 million homes. There was homeless people right there on the street constantly. Like literally the other side of her street, there was homeless people sleeping on the street because there was like a school that had like a little tree area in a park. And that's where the homeless people would sleep at night. I was like, that's so crazy. You live in a neighborhood where the medium house price was probably like $8 or $9 million. And there's homeless people right outside your house where you have to build 10-foot high brick walls around your home to where you can't even have a view of your neighborhood. Because of that, and the dichotomy of that, like, blew my mind. It's like, that's not how I want to live. If I can ever get the money to have a $1 million home one day, I want to live in an area where I can look out, step out on my property, and it's like beautiful landscape. I've got some space, some breathing room. And I would not mind, I guess what I'm getting at is this, I would not mind paying my fair share of maybe a little bit more taxes at that level if it meant not having to see homeless people in my city, even if it meant like a 5% chance of benefiting the cause of getting people, bringing jobs back to my community, serving my community with better programs to get the people the help they needed to not live in a country that is in a decline. Like, one last thing I want to say, and I'll let you take over again. I want to give everybody that's listening a small piece of homework. If you feel like it, go and pop on either the movie Home Alone 1, or more specifically, I'd like you to pop on Home Alone 2. And I want you just to observe the shots of when Kevin McAllister's character, Macaulay Culkin, first arrives in New York. Look at how clean that place looks. I just watched this last Christmas, and it blew my mind just watching. It's like a time capsule, and it's such a wide shot of the city. There's no way they cordoned off that much of the city for this shot. It's real life New York. And New York has always been maybe a little bit more of a dirty, older city. You know what I mean? Just the nature of it being older. It's so clean. There's like one homeless person to like 50,000 people that look like they've got money and they're taken care of and they have family and everybody's happy. Everybody's clean. They're not looking at their phones. They're upright. Their eyes are looking at the horizon. They're engaged with life. And if you were to take a snapshot or go on YouTube and look at the state of New York now in that same area, it's mind-blowing. It's like a third world country.
Oh yeah,
there's by comparison. It's definitely not third world country, but by comparison. And it breaks my heart because this is my country. And I just hope we can change it. I know me and you and a lot of people, a lot of us, you know, what I call real folk, have our hearts in the right place. It's just at the top, it's so corrupt. It doesn't matter left or right. Dude, it's all the same, you know, brand of bullshit to me. I just hope one day we can get somebody in there that actually is a real life American, not a reanimated 90-year-old millionaire and not like a celebrity, just a real life American ass motherfucker that had to go to public school, had to work at Walmart for a few years. And the campaign is, I am an actual real American. I don't know, have all the answers, but I want to fix our country. Not like, oh, I'm going to get the bathroom rights, or, oh, we're going to, you know, like all the bullshit they distract us with. Like, and this is where the end of my political speech is, but I care. And I care about you. I care about the people I don't even know. And I just want us to do better.
I think what you're saying is that you want us to get back to a time of when America had a sense of community. And that, yes, that was the very end, I think, of the middle. Well, not the very end, but probably the middle of the 90s. Because I remember it was not uncommon to see entire streets during the 4th of July have the American flags all out there, watching kids run up and down street in radio flyer wagons, having neighbors have each other over during the holidays, or, you know, just having your next door neighbor come over. Neighbors don't even communicate with each other anymore.
No, like, I was just about to say, like, imagine your neighbor knocks on your door and says, can I borrow a cup of sugar? You'd be like, who the fuck are you? What are you knocking on my door? That's so violating. Ah, stranger danger. Whereas before, it's like you knew your neighborhood, and yeah, like there would be like block parties, and that sense of community was real. But now we're all so guarded, and I think that it reflects the state of the world too. We're guarded because we're forced to be, because we're learning that the world is harder, so people are more willing to commit, you know, petty crimes and theft, and you have to be more suspicious. And it's just this downward spiral, or this negative reinforcement spiral.
You know, it's like
a vicious cycle.
Exactly. Well, it's like when you watch movies from the 50s and, you know, the husband gets home and the wife is out there on the porch, you know, hi, honey, how was work? Oh, pretty good, dear. And then she'll be like, and they're like, hey, the Andersons want to know if you want to come over for dinner tomorrow night. And then, you know, the husband and wife come out of the door in the house, like, you know, two houses down from them. They're like, hey, Don, how's it going? They're like, oh, hey, Jim. You know, it's like you don't see that anymore. I saw that the very end of it when I was growing up. We used to know our neighbors growing up. We knew our neighbor across the street. We knew our neighbor. And that's the other thing, too. Like, when people buy a home, they don't own it for long. You know, they'll buy it, they'll flip it. They'll buy it, they'll flip it. Or they'll buy it, or they lose it. And, yeah, you know,
that's if a common
you
can one. Even.
Yep. Or, you know, it's like now my neighborhood where my parents live in a little city called Oxnard, California. Well, it's a big city now, and it is not doing well. And on our street, it used to look like the pinnacle peak of like height of just suburban family, you know, the cookie cutter houses, nice, happy looking area. Every grass was green. Every place had nice shrubs and palm trees. And, you know, it was just a beautiful area. Now there's, you know, foreclosed, there's for rent. You got, you know, six different people that are strangers living in one house. Like my parents said, they don't even know their neighbors anymore. It's all changed. And it's just all like a bunch of either kids living in the house, like blasting their music at all hours of the night. You know, they don't know who their neighbors are anymore because like they're just up to no good. And, you know, it's just, it's crazy. I don't know how. I just think technology had a lot to do with it. The medium income jobs had a lot to do with it. Now, like, even if you're in your teens or, you know, early 20s, you're working two, some people three part-time jobs because the full-time jobs are not hiring and giving any benefits. And, you know, it's just, so you're right. Something does have to change. And because we're all strangers to each other now. We can live right next door to each other, but we're strangers. And I think that's a, you know, kind of an analogy for many things.
Yeah. And so you and I, before this conversation, like much earlier today, we're talking, and I was telling you how the other day, my girlfriend noticed some like kids, and by kids, I mean like 13, 14 year old outside. And she was looking out the window and she's like, well, these kids are outside being weird. And I was like, what? My immediate reaction was like, what do you mean being weird? Are they tagging? Are they vandalizing. What is it? And when I got up and looked out the window, they were just playing tag. And that happens so infrequently now that, like, it blew my mind. I haven't seen kids just, like, playing outside. And by kids, again, I mean, like, young teenager. Because you'll always see, like, I hope, you'll always see, like, little kids playing outside.
Yeah, 3-4-year-olds, 5-year-olds.
Right. But, like, that in-between age where when I was a teenager, me and my friends, we'd always go outside and go on, like, little random adventures and, you know, make little make-believe scenarios. Like, oh, we're being, like, chased by some bad guys. Or, like, every time you see a car, like, hide or whatever. And it was fun. It was a blast. We didn't hurt anybody. We were just having fun. Probably, you know, getting some light exercise in, just running around or roughhousing or whatever. I never, ever see that anymore. And I'm sure, like, you know, the kids, when they go to high school or middle school or whatever, they do their little PE. But outside of that, everybody is inside. And I know this because I'm a big walker. I walk, like, 4 to 5 miles every day. I put my headphones in. It centers me. It re-energizes me. It helps me heal some injuries I'm working on. The only people I see outside are, like, senior citizens. And they all know me now because I'm the only one that's, like, under 40, barely, walking outside. And it's like everybody else is either senior citizens or it's a ghost town, despite the fact I live in a really, like, nice, big neighborhood, clean neighborhood. It has a very nice path that overlooks my entire city and the other two surrounding cities. Nobody's outside. It's so weird.
Yeah.
It was so mind-blowing to just be like, oh my God, kids are playing. There was a small sliver of time when Pokemon Go was a massive cultural sensation that I saw all the people coming outside. And it was kind of nice because it's like, oh my God, all these people are outside and they're not up to anything bad. They're all doing something innocent. It was really sweet. And then after that, the pandemic hit, you know, a little while after, and now we're all just inside all the time. You go from inside your house to inside your car to inside your work if you're lucky enough to have a job, rinse and repeat. And that's it. It's like, Jesus.
Have you noticed one thing? If you go by parks today, you don't see people at parks anymore.
Never, dude. I have to pass a park to go to Target, and I'm a big Target shopper, VIP customer. And it's a huge park. I used to go to the park growing up, and there's even like a special cordoned off area for dogs, just a dog park.
Is that Kimball?
Never see people there. No, I don't know what it's funny. I've been going there my whole life. I don't know what it's called. I just always called it the park by that one school. Like, that's how I always refer to it. That one school I didn't go to, it's that park by Target, by that one school. But it's a really big park. It's a really old park. It's kind of tucked away in Ventura. But I can see it from the road, and there's just no people there. It's got multiple baseball diamonds. They've got tennis courts. They've got a dog park. And then they've got three different playgrounds and a huge just open grassy area to do whatever you want and barbecues. No people. Maybe like on a holiday, that's the only time you'll see people. But like when I was a kid, every weekend, me, all my cousins, we'd all be at the park or a playground or the beach or just out front in our neighborhoods riding our bikes or whatever. It's so crazy how less common that is. Everybody just hands their kid a tablet. Here's the app. Here's the game. Here's the tablet. Here's the YouTube videos. It's just like, oh my God, dude.
Oh yeah.
And I played video games growing up, but I was outside more than I played video games. Video games is what we did when we were exhausted and starving and we had to come in from like the pool and eat our sandwiches. We'd just play some video games real quick. But then we just did that until we were fed and we'd go right back outside.
I would play cops and robbers with Gabe and stuff in the backyard or even out in the front yard. We'd be running up and down the street with like black cap guns, yelling like "Freeze, police!"
Oh my god, I forgot cap guns were even a thing, dude. I remember having those growing up. They took those away from us so long ago, man. When I was a small child, you know, like first they became orange, and then they just took them away flat out. It's like, oh wow, I forgot.
Oh yeah, now today, if you did that, you'd be shot by the SWAT team in like 5 minutes.
but yeah, like. If you ever are watching Home Alone 2, I think just to tie back my original thought, take a look at that scene and compare the state. It wasn't that long ago. Like, what was in Home Alone 2? Probably like 95, 96?
I think so.
It's just so crazy how much culture has changed. And I remember when I was younger, the older people would say, you don't know how good you kids have it. I had to walk 6 miles to school in the snow, you know, whatever, that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you always think like, oh, you're just old and, you know, bitter or whatever. But I think they were onto something. We did have it good because I would tell the kids today, man, I'm glad I was raised as like, you know, I was born in the 80s. So I consider myself more of a 90s kid. I was just like too young to remember most of the 80s, except maybe like 89. Most of my memories are 90s. So I'm a 90s kid. It's like kids today, I would straight up say, like, you have it worse than I did. I got to do so much. I had such an imagination. I was able to go to Disneyland all the time because it wasn't painfully expensive and overcrowded to go. Like, I had tons of friends. We were writing, like, oh, when you watch like Stranger Things or any of these nostalgia,
oh, I love 80s, that 90s show, yeah.
show, that was my life. We did that stuff. We went outside, and even though there wasn't really monsters and demons in our imagination, we would be conquering those things because it felt real when we play games and stuff. And kids today, it's just tablet. That's it. Oh, let me watch Jake Paul sell me some Prime energy drink, or oh, let's see what the Kylie Jenner's up to, or whatever. Pick your influencer.
Hey, I'll take Jake Paul's Prime energy drinks all day, man. Those are pretty good.
I'll take the money. I'll take the bank account from that. But, you know, but I mean, just for like little kids, it's just weird.
Yeah. And then we were inventor.
Might die. So I don't know if you want to get to a natural wrapping up state here.
Oh, okay.
But yeah. I just wanted to give you a heads up. I didn't want to just leave you. And by the way, I'm at Chris West TV on YouTube and all social media, if anybody's listening this far. At Chris West TV. Right, yeah, up there. Guys, I'm just as good as Jake Paul and the Jenners. I'm that level of production quality, and I'll sell you an energy drink in 5 years.
Yeah, make sure you go and subscribe to his YouTube account. He does great reviews on modern and classic gaming. Man, your reviews are awesome, dude. I'm not just saying that, not trying to kiss your ass. They really are good. You have a really good production value. And, you know, it's always good to get into the classics, too. For all the nostalgic people that like busting into the old PlayStation or, you know, anything of that era, check him out. He was just talking about Dead Rising the other day. And that is a game for the, I guess, the ages. You know, that was the first kind of runaround zombie shooter. But anyways, thank you very much, sir, for coming on. I greatly appreciate your time. This has been, you know, it's been a good talk, man. You know, kind of going down memory lane, but also seeing how, like, we got work to do, you know.
Thank you for having me, dude. It's great talking to you. I could literally talk to you forever. It's crazy.
Yeah, dude, we definitely have really good conversations. You know, intellectual talks are kind of a rarity these days. But I've always had good convos with you, man.
Absolutely.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning in to We're Just Talking. Stay tuned for a next episode coming up very soon. You guys have a good one. Take care. Bye.
Can't wait.